This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Psychological safety in sport. What does that even mean? What is it, and why is it important? Fundamentally, it's just about creating a welcoming, inclusive, and a safe environment at your local sports club. It's just being nice to each other. But how simple is that? Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning. Warwick Long, of course, host of the Country Hour, joining you from ABC Shepparton. Psychological safety in sport was, right? It sounds kind of hardcore.
It sounds
complicated. But when we hear about people leaving a sporting group, a local sporting group, a local sports club, they generally don't leave because they don't like playing the sport. They leave because they don't like how they're being treated, or that they don't like the people. So how do we change that environment?
Rochelle, when you said, I want to talk psychological safety in sport, you know, I was thinking, what is that? And that's exactly how I was working it out in my brain as well, thinking it really boils down to what keeps people coming back and keeping these clubs and keeping these sporting endeavours alive, whether they're playing or whether they stay involved with a club or around a club for a long period after. This is part of the culture that makes cities, suburbs, regional towns and the small little dots on maps tick, right? This is what brings us together. And it can't just be about winning. The easy answer to something like this is, oh, you win. That keeps people coming back. It's not that. Some of the best clubs that you see around are not the ones that always win. There's something else in that fabric.
What is it about
it going?
The club where there's a man or a woman that has been there for 50 years, 60 years, right? They stopped playing. The knees and the hips gave up a long time ago, but they are still somehow involved in that club. It could be a major role, it could be a minor role. So what's happening at that club, right? What is it about the essence of that club that keeps that person involved? I find that fascinating. But then on the flip side was, there are sometimes people that stay in roles at clubs for too long and don't know when it's time to step aside and let some fresh blood in, maybe take on a mentor role, or let the new wave come in and do it their way, because that's an interesting part of this too.
This is the hard thing. It's hard to get it right, I think, for all of us. And we've seen so many clubs die in so many different sporting endeavours over areas. And I'm sure there's a myriad of reasons behind it. But at its core is, you know, what is the thought process into this club? What is keeping people coming back? And psychological safety would not have been on my top 10 list for what kills a club. But when you think about it, that's exactly what it is, right? It is creating a safe space for people to grow and want to be there on their own free time.
So if you've got new people that want to join the club, if you've got maybe personalities that butt heads, that don't get along, that doesn't necessarily mean they don't both belong at that club. How do you create an environment where people can share their ideas openly and freely and know that they won't be shut down? How do you look at things like gender equality, how you treat your umpires, ensuring that someone can be their true selves? Are you worried maybe that there is some homophobia at your club? All of these things come in to what has been called psychological safety within your sporting club. So what keeps you at your local club long after you stop playing?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt with you in Melbourne. Warwick Long joining you from ABC Shepparton. Psychological safety in sport. What keeps you at your club? It's generally the people and how people treat each other. And this was before we speak to the Australian Sports Commission about this, who are releasing a heap of modules so that we can get our heads around this and we can get better at this. I would think treating each other well in a small country town at your local club is possibly more important than in some of the bigger metro areas where maybe you have less choice. You can't jump from club to club.
Well, and likewise, your club needs as many available players as you can. So I grew up in Broadford, sort of semi-regional Victoria now. We needed nearly every available, you know, human boy of that age to play. So we had our junior football club. And I remember we in under-17s, it was a couple of my friends, close friends, literally got enough boys together, then went and had to recruit a coach, basically, to have a side at the moment. And that club's in its own problems at the moment with a much bigger population, but failing to put a senior team together this year. This is one of the interesting things when we talk psychological safety, is what I'd like to talk about is and examine is the difference between learning to play with people who are different from you. You know, you're not going to like everybody in that team if you're literally grabbing every available boy to play in a team. But you can achieve some great things together as part of that club. And you may not interact with those people much else anywhere else in your life. But that club environment was created in a way that kept us coming back every week to keep playing. And so that's interesting to me as well. And then I think about what I've been involved in probably for the longest period of my life is my local tennis club. Shout out to the Central Parkers out there. We didn't win anything this year. It's not the winning that gets me back. It's the afternoon teas, but also the great people that are there that you meet.
And your girls have grown up at that club, yeah, right?
I took the babies with me, went to, you know, show them off at the club when I was a little bit younger now. They're one of them is in high school now. You know, she has grown up in and around all of these same families at this club. And it is, I think, feeling like it's a safe place, but it's the great people that make you want to go back every year and spend time with these people.
What has your club done to create a welcoming, an inclusive, a safe environment? And what keeps you at the club long after you've stopped playing? Ron's in Docklands.
There's a football team in West Australia called the New Caney Football Club. I was there at its 75th anniversary about 20 years ago. But when they turned the West Australia to wheat, they had these sidings every 7 miles, and little towns grew up around them. And as the farms got bigger and roads got better, each second town basically got rationalised out. And New Caney was one of the first towns that went. And all exists of New Caney now is a football scoreboard in a wheat field. You can actually look it up on Google. It shows that New Caney scores something like 1 million goals and the opposition scores 50,000. I don't know why they had the opposition still scoring 50,000, but I went to the 75th anniversary of it, and just the history of it. They had somebody talking from every 10 years of its existence, and they would tell the stories when they used to go from one town to another for the great bloodbath of 1956. And it was just wonderful, just wonderful.
I know, there's something. I remember being at my uncle's funeral. He was just such a sports nut and loved his community so much. And I swear his eulogy was like a history of the Yarragon Football Club. Right? And it was because it's what kept him going, it's what he loved about his life, and everyone that was in there was somehow connected to this text. Rish and Was, I think this actually needs to be examined in a broader context, not just sport. The same occurs in social organisations, service organisations, political organisations, and so much more. It appears to be the same situation, just a different meaning depending on the organisation. Well, Cameron Trudell is the coaching and officiating director of the Australian Sports Commission. And Cam, you and your team, that includes, of course, the great Kieran Perkins, have been working really hard on ensuring that grassroots gets it right, because without grassroots, we don't have the elite. Where does psychological safety come into this?
Got this this ability to deliver sport nationally, and so many clubs are so vibrant and passionate about the way that they go about providing sporting opportunities. But sometimes I think over the years we've sort of shifted away from being about people and being more about the sport and putting the sport first. So how do we create these, and looking at where Australia's changed over the years with regards to the demographics within Australia and who's turning up and who's not, importantly, who's not turning up to our clubs, how do we start to really open people's minds and showcase the value to how we treat new people, how we include them, some of the things that we need to be aware of when we're sort of engaging with new? to make our clubs and sports as inviting as possible to people so that everyone has a place in sport when they turn up to their local club. So we can put some authenticity behind that. And that was really the core and the crux of what we're trying to achieve. It's multifaceted. There's many, many layers to this. But psychological safety is something that we really need to let float to the top so that we can start to understand that we're in the people business first.
Yeah.
And this is a really key piece of how we can create these inclusive environments.
I want to examine that a little bit more with you, but can I pick up on that comment about how a lot of clubs have transitioned away from not being about the people anymore to being more about the sport, and that's missing the point. Can you give examples or ideas about how clubs have let that happen?
Yeah. You actually brought one up before, is when we talk about the clubs putting more focus on winning rather than how we win, and winning to the detriment of people rather than winning and keeping people healthy, happy and safe in the meantime. And we hear about so many athletes in high performance sport who leave and then go through these terrible personal journeys post sport. And if you magnify that at the community level, where if everything is about winning and we celebrate only the winning, that means that in any competition where there's 14 teams, we've got one team that won and we've got 13 losers. And it's about how we sort of look at that more objectively and subjectively, where we look at the fact that are they losers, or without 14 teams, we don't have a competition. Without diversity, without people who are coming in doing different things, what we lack is the ability for people to, one, grow and thrive in their own environment, but coming through systems and pathways. Wouldn't it be great for those people to be exposed to as many environments as possible, decision-making pieces, so that when they do get to perform at any other level, they've got a really good depth and breadth of knowledge. So there's so many ways that we can see the enrichment that including everyone and engaging with everyone can provide to us.
And we'll examine ways to do that, I'm sure, through this hour. But before we even get there, given, I suppose, we've been through a period of COVID where a lot of kids stopped playing sport and there's been this sort of break and a lot of effort through sport to try and win them back and win people back to clubs as well. Is it a crunch time, really, for a lot of self-reflection by a lot of sporting clubs about why they're doing what they're doing and how they get people involved?
I actually think you've nailed it. I think this is our line in the sand moment where we can stop to reflect and sort of reorganise ourselves and reevaluate. And I know that I've shared it before on this show, is that we've got coaches out there with a lot of them with the best of intentions, and coaching people how they used to be coached, but not having some of the new information that we've got. Something like the average child of 1985 is 250 metres quicker over 1600 metres than the average child of 2016. So they're expecting those people to come in and do what people used to do. We used to play in backyards. We used to play in the street. They're not exposed to that. So this may be these people's first engagement in sport. And if there's an expectation of them that they can already play the sport because that's what we used to be able to do, how do they feel? And how can we recognise that? How can we then support them? And how can we put them on a personal growth journey that then services them, gives them confidence, competence, and makes them feel like they immediately belong and not part of the group
because you're not good enough. Exactly. And I love the idea too that a lot of these modules that the Australian Sports Commission is working on is because the fact is when we put our hands up to help or to be a part of it, there's this presumption that we know, right? There's this presumption that we know what we're doing.
Yep.
And in actual fact, we don't know. None of us know. And we need a lot of help. And I love the idea and the question that you asked Cameron Trudell around, look at your club and ask, who's not turning up? Who isn't here and who potentially should be here? Cameron Trudell is with you, Coaching and Officiating Director of the Australian Sports Commission. Professor Rochelle Imey is with you as well, joining us from our Ballarat studios. She's a Professor of Sport Science and the Director of Physical Activity and Sport Insights Group at Federation University. Rochelle, this is something that you're incredibly passionate about, and especially coming from regional Victoria, do you need to look around and ask that question of who's not here and why aren't they here?
Oh, absolutely, because if they're not coming back, they obviously haven't had a good experience. And if people have a good experience in sport, they will come back, and they'll come back with their friends and their family as well.
I love this, Rochelle, from Brian in Mornington, saying, we older members keep going back to the cricket club just to tell the younger current players how good we were to reminisce. The older I get, the better I was. Well, Brian, there's always got to be an element of that, isn't it? Rochelle, is that an important part of a club environment, though, to have those older generations, to have people who don't play but care enough to turn up and watch the next generation go about it?
Oh, multi-generations in sport is fantastic, and I think the essence is a social connectedness, but more than that is a sense of belonging. So people that play sport, if we can get them to have that sense of belonging, and a lot of people volunteer because they are really connected to that club and it's quite meaningful to them in their lives.
There's a text here that says, well, maybe local clubs would be more inclusive if large corporations like the AFL actually started letting gay men play football. Well, here's the thing. I think gay men are playing football. They just don't feel comfortable coming out in their current environment. We'll actually be speaking to a professor a little later about that. When we talk about diversity and inclusivity, we are making headway when it comes to just thinking about our entire community. Cameron, in the work that these modules are looking at, where do you look at gender, where you look at homophobia, where you look at making sure people can just be their true selves at a local club? And then I guess what work has to be done from a larger picture, from a larger lens of that particular code if that person doesn't feel like they're welcome?
Yeah, it's a genuine problem. And I think, again, we've got some of the older coaches that believe that they're doing the best thing, and they may use language that's not appropriate, not inclusive, but they're unaware because it's something that they've always done. So there's pieces here that we talk about, unconscious bias. And unconscious bias is a term that we use on how I've always done things. And there's a couple of things that become problematic with something like that. Is when you're told it's no longer unconscious, it now becomes deliberate. This is the decision you're making. So how do we make sure that everyone gets the information with regards to how we talk, how we act, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, and how we can sort of, what are the alternatives with regards to how? Because a lot of the time we say, don't do this, but we don't give people or empower them with the what, how can we best do it? And there's another piece of when we are connecting with people who maybe of a different lifestyle, different culture, etc. How do we respectfully set the environment to ask the question of how can I best engage with you? And if we start from a position of acceptance, because I often hear this word of tolerance, and tolerance for me has got a negative connotation, is that I'll just tolerate you.
Yeah.
And for me, that's not what we're trying to achieve. We're trying to come from a position of acceptance, and I'll deal with the tolerance myself. With regards to, this is my battle. If I've got biases that I'm uncomfortable with, how am I going to overcome them? Because I need to come in from this position of acceptance, is that these people here, one, deserve the right to be here, be safe, they belong, and I want to create that environment because that is what our club mantra is that there's a place for all to play. So the way we're setting up our courses, we're trying not to segment. We're trying to actually say, be a good human to everyone, treat everyone with dignity and respect, and here's some tools of how you can find out more and come from a position, as I say, of curiosity to then see how that then folds out. What a great sandpit for you to test and to work with, to be exposed to different people, which really helps you.
I mean, and that's life, right? Because
exactly
how boring
right.
would life be? Rochelle, I mean, I know that from a professional perspective, you know, as a professor in sports science, this is something that you're passionate about. But also on a personal level, you know, whether it be rocking up to your local golf club and they say, oh, no, you know, ladies only play on Wednesdays and Fridays or whatever it may be. Looking at what responsibility we all have as humans, as Cameron just said, and as that text said earlier from Pete in Ballarat, this is not just kind of about sport, looking at inclusivity and standing up for yourself or feeling like you can be heard. It's across life. You know, these are life lessons. So how do we advocate for ourselves and say, well, you know what, this lady works on a Wednesday and a Friday. How about I play golf when I want to play golf?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had some experiences on the golf course where I've been told that I should be home cooking dinner. So I think it's about, you know, being nice, but getting to know people, but also then calling out bad behaviour. So whether we see it as a spectator, as a coach, as a player, behaviour that's not acceptable, we do need to call out.
That is brutal, the idea of someone telling you you should be home cooking when you're taking part in their club.
It's actually happened a couple of times because I don't have time to play competition, so I run around sort of after work before I pick up children to get them to sport, and I sometimes got to miss a hole, so I'll sort of wait respectively and sort of run past, and they'll look at me, and I said, oh, I've got to go in a hurry, and they said, oh, you've got to go cook dinner.
What do you say in that instance?
Well, the first time it happened, I didn't say anything, and I was sort of a bit of a beginner, and I didn't feel like I really belonged in the club, and I got really upset with myself when I got to the car, and I go, well, this isn't acceptable behaviour, and what if that happened to a young girl, or she might not ever come back? I'm quite a confident, mature woman, you know, confident in sport. And so I went home, and my boys, they were furious. They said, oh, we would have had a go at them. I did then contact the club, and they contacted the player and had words, and there was in the newsletter about respectable behaviour. And it happened once again. And second time, I think it was just, they were just trying to be joking, and they said, oh, you got to go home and cook dinner. And I said, no, my husband's got that covered, actually.
Don't you hate it when you leave, when you don't advocate for yourself?
And absolutely.
The frustration that you bring onto yourself because you're like, I thought I was bigger than that. What kind of feminist am I? You know, you start to have all of these questions, and then you come up with all the perfect responses at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, the next night, and beat yourself up about it. But what's also important in this, Rochelle, is not only the next time you're advocating for yourself and at least talking to your family about it, but I actually think it's the next step that particular club takes. How do they then respond to that? Do they ignore it? Do they laugh it off? Or do they try and make change?
And they were very good. They rang me and they spoke to me. They spoke to the person, and then they had in the newsletter, and they came back to me and asked me if I was comfortable with what had occurred, and I was. And they've since had a lot of progress. You know, this was a couple of years ago. Really good progress in terms of you know, behaviour and accepting of women and girls more broadly.
And if that didn't happen, do you think you'd still be playing there?
Probably not. No.
What's happening at your local club to try and create a welcome environment that anyone and everyone who wants to be involved, playing or behind the scenes, feels like they can? And maybe you've been at a club long after you stopped playing. What kept you there?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Rochelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne, your co-host this morning, Warwick Long, of course, host of the Country Hour, joining you from ABC Shepparton. We're talking about psychological safety in sport. A series of modules have been released from the Australian Sports Commission, and we'll go into how you can download those and access those a little later. Joining with you on the Conversation Hour today to discuss that is Cameron Trudell from the Australian Sports Commission and Rochelle Imey, a Professor of Sport Science. The text here from David was in Belgrave, and it says, great conversation, but I'd make the point that moving from tolerance to acceptance isn't enough. We need to move to a culture in sport and in society of not just accepting, but valuing diversity and difference. Beautiful. People don't just want to be accepted. They want to be valued for who they are and what they bring. So this is more than just sport, this conversation.
It is, and it does filter through in life. And I can hear you really wanting to get in on this discussion, Cameron Trudell. That strikes a chord with you, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I definitely agree with that, is that it's, as I say, it's enriching for us all. It adds to our lives. And I think that that's a really good point. And acceptance, yeah, it's not far enough. But as I say, it's a move to... seeing the value and in how enriching it is in your life. And we often hear excuses. I was listening to Rochelle there, and there's a piece that there would have been more than just that person and Rochelle there in that interaction. It's the bystander. Also, how do we empower those people to speak up and say, actually, that's not okay? I often hear too, I'm an old dog, it's hard to teach me new tricks. Meanwhile, they're pulling their mobile phone out of their pocket and they'll make those convenient changes in life, but not the ones that actually are inconvenient to them. So there is a cultural shift, and it's about how do we empower people with the right tools to speak up, stand up, and make sure that that we are protecting but also valuing people. I really love that.
It's hard to do that, though, isn't it? Because most of us, confrontation, it's frightening, right? Your heart rate, your heart is jumping out of your chest. Like we said earlier, you think of the perfect thing to say 24 hours later. Yeah. Most of us try to avoid confrontation. Do you have a concern at the Australian Sports Commission that we would just leave a sports club or any environment, right, a social environment, before we would put our hand up and say, I think we need to discuss this? What happened was inappropriate, that would actually just go, you know what, I'm out of here.
I think that's what's happening. I think that's exactly what's happening. I think as we sort of move forward, this is why our breadth of resources that we're now providing is far greater than this is how to coach a sport. It's about how do we start to really create these authentic connections with people. And we would hope that over time, and this is the something that we can't measure at the moment, but over time, as we normalise that these are the acceptable behaviours and these are your support tools, that more and more people pick it up to then help with regards to what role can I play to supporting this in this environment. And if you think about it, the point that we made before is, what if people who aren't currently at clubs now feel safer to come to clubs and we're arming them with the tools? What does sport look like as we move forward? Keeping in mind, in years to come, 70% of Australia's growth will come from migration. So we are changing at a rate of knots. How can we embrace that and ensure that we're supporting people?
I'm just thinking about the kind of person that would push back on a conversation like this and what their arguments would be. And I'd love your commentary on this, Cameron and Rochelle Imey, who are both our guests at the moment here on The Conversation Hour, looking at psychological safety in sport. We've spoken about club environments not having to be about winning to have good and successful clubs. We've spoken a lot about the kind of environment you need to make to be accepting and go even further in the club environment. There will be someone out there saying, no, sport is about bettering yourself, about getting fitter, about doing well. It is competitive by nature. And we are speaking away that important learning experience as part of sport. How would you engage in that discussion with someone?
Rochelle?
Yeah, we can still be nice. You know, you might be striving to achieve and winning, but you can still be nice. But I'm actually really concerned about the social media and bullying, particularly for our youth and the safety with that through sport. I had an instance just a fortnight ago. My 17-year-old son was playing men's tennis ITF events, and I didn't realise that people could bet on these events. And as soon as he'd finished the match, he had about a dozen direct messages from people, random people from around the world, abusing him because he'd lost the match and that obviously bet against him. And some of these were just, you know, saying, I hope your legs get chopped off. And others to the extent of, I hope you go and end your life. And I was just horrified that this was existing when my child is just there playing a game of tennis.
That's okay. You've just taken that to a next level when we talk about psychological safety. This is actually a complete safety concern for you as a parent. I can't imagine what must have been going through your mind. How shocked were you, Rochelle, that people were betting on your son's game without knowledge that that was actually occurring, and then that they had direct access to him to be able to message him?
Yeah, they obviously contacted him through Instagram, but like they weren't obviously contacts, and I'm not really big on social. But what else concerned me is when he told his brother, his twin is obviously also 17, he goes, oh, you know you've made it, mate, now, because you're getting online bullying. And so this normalisation that this is an acceptable thing that will occur once you're in sort of talent development pathways or semi-elite, and I was just horrified.
Cam, does that what sort of alarm bells are raised for you from hearing that?
A lot of alarm bells. I mean, that's the, this is exactly the core of what this discussion is about, is that the world's changed and we haven't kept up. The social media piece, the all the ways that you can access and again be an anonymous bully these days is horrific. And the ways that we protect isn't just about the post that sort of event. And I'm sorry that you and your son have gone through that, Rochelle, because that does sound horrific. But what we've tried to do is we've tried to go with a curative approach to that, which is when it happens, then we go through this process, rather than trying to have the broader conversation with regards to what's the preventative approach to how do we support and get front foot these issues. And I'm not sure that we're sort of caught up enough that we can have those conversations now, but they're the conversations we need to be having. That's horrific. I can't believe that. That's terrible.
And just following on from that, is there a difference when we're talking psychological safety in sport at the high performance level compared to the club level, or is it closer, the weekend warrior level, even if I put it like that, or is it closer than we think it is?
Well, I think it is closer. I think that there's a level of disconnection between what Rochelle's just described versus what can happen at a local level or at a local club, but it's that it becomes that impersonal versus personal interactions. But I think it is a broader issue, and again, I don't think it's confined to sport. I think this happens across multiple industries and sectors, and I think it's a societal issue that we've got that we're trying to solve in sport, but I think it's a much broader conversation than that.
I think it's when you said, how do I just be a good human?
Yes.
How do we just be good humans, whether that be aggression on our roads, how we treat each other at work? Lots of different perspectives coming in here. This says, I was a single parent of a sport mad kid. She loved basketball, soccer and AFL footy. I found the soccer scene was very sexist. It was considered a dad's domain. I felt very excluded. Dads did the boundaries. Dads controlled the whole soccer scene, so much so that the tins of beer were sold as a part of the sausage sizzle fundraiser on Sunday mornings. Women were very much excluded, even though this was a girls' team. And others talking about how their daughter loved cricket and played in the boys' team for years. It was an original club. Some of the boys refused to bowl to the girls during practice, despite the girls taking their turns in bowling to them. It was never pulled up by the coaches or the parents that any of these boys were doing this. We left and we found another club who treats the girls and the boys just the same. Interestingly, from starting at a similar size, our inclusive club is now 6 times larger than the original. Do you see that inclusivity builds strength? Is that something that you've noticed? I might put that to you, Rochelle.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's lots of things we can do, little things we can do to make a difference. And an example from my local footy club is traditionally the parents would get the roster and the fathers would get the roster for the goal umpiring, and the females would get the roster for the canteen with their specific name on it rather than the family's name. And then over recent years, they actually just have all, a family name is Joyce. The Joyce family has to do, one week's of umpiring and 1 week in the canteen. And then, my husband can serve a pie just as well as what I can. So then you get that crossover. But that simple little thing of just changing the name to the family name rather than a gendered role can make a difference.
This, I'm guessing the cooking of dinner on the golf course was nothing nothing more than an attempt at fun and nothing more. What's wrong with you guys and your obsession with people's sexuality and identity? Most people don't care. We are mostly living busy lives and trying to pay our way and come out at the other end. Please ease up on it, says that particular text.
Reckon it was a bloke?
Yeah.
I'm just going to leave it there. There was a name and I'm not going to read the name. So what is your club doing to make it more inclusive, more welcoming? Do you look around sometimes and wonder who is not currently at your club and why they should be? Jason's in Yallourn. Oh, Yallourn North, beautiful part of the world. G'day, Jason.
How are you going?
Good, mate. What did you want to say?
Yeah, so I've been part of a local football club I played there in 93. We won a premiership and was still involved up until last year as a football operations manager. I just think the conversation's gone a bit negative as far as what you guys are pointing out. Sure, there's areas to work on, like anything in society, but the positives, you're missing out on the positives, which is seeing the young kids come through and being mentored by people like myself and senior players and, you know, coming through at under-18s level with some real difficulties in life and seeing them come out as 24, 25-year-olds is really
great.
Kids that, you know,
keeps you there, Jason? Like, it must have had a good vibe about it, the club, in order for you to keep going back. And, you know, you said you won your premiership in 93, you know? Not saying, but that was a little while ago now. So what keeps you there?
It's culture, 100%. 100% culture. And if you have that culture right, you'll attract the families, you'll attract the young kids, and you'll keep the older people there. I mean, sure, you're going to lose that that level of adults that are 30s to 35s, 40s that have young kids, because that's when we tend to lose them, but then they come back to the club once their kids are back involved in footy, and it's 100% culture, 100%.
And Jason, just along those lines of the culture and the behind the scenes of the club, because that is, I'd imagine, one of the great enjoyable things is seeing young kids come through, become adults under your watch as well. But how do you keep a club great? Do you need a turnover on committees and boards to keep enthusiasm and so forth there? Is that what you saw, or was everyone doing the same job for a long period of time?
Yeah, well, when I come back to the club, everyone had been doing the same job, and They then decided to move out and we changed things. You know, we just modernised the club, I guess, and modernised the strategy of the club. But then now, I've been there 6 years again, so now I've looked back and watched the new people come through this year, and it's just absolutely magnificent seeing the new things that they're bringing to the club, but also myself just staying involved in the fringes, you know, whether that's working behind the bar or, you know, working in the past players bar. But the new level of people that have come into that committee is just fantastic. You know,
Jason, that is such an that's such an interesting point, being excited that someone's not doing the job the same way you did it. I think you've almost hit on something really great about culture there, haven't you?
That's for sure. You need to be able to move on. You need to be able to say, hey, look, I'm 55, it's time to bring someone new in. And now this year we've got a lot of new young people on the committee, and from what I can see from a distance, because we haven't started playing yet this year, they're absolutely magnificent. Absolutely magnificent.
Jason, everything about this conversation just hits the nail. I mean, Yallourn North, for those who don't know it, this is a small community, right? It's a legendary community. I might be slightly biased, but Yallourn North is small. So the idea that you can keep this club happy and healthy, keeping new people coming in and turning over, that's also what keeps people in town, right? Because they feel connected. People don't move away.
Exactly, and that was part of the strategy. You know, you must have that 5-year strategy in place as well. You can't run day by day, and part of that strategy 5-6 years ago was to get the community involved, get our local community more involved. But if I could just say one thing about winning, very difficult to get 25 young guys between the ages of 20 and 35 and not be worried about winning, because it's just a natural
But that's
thing.
Okay, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. What you need to do then is have a strategy if you don't. So winning is good, but losing is good, but you need a strategy for those young kids if we are losing. So, you know.
Jason, put this man in charge, I say. Whatever it is, just put Jason from Yallourn North in charge. Jason, so good to hear from you. And that's exactly what we're talking about. How do you create that inclusive environment? It's more than just sport. It keeps people wanting to be a part of it. It keeps people in town. It keeps people connected. When we talk about psychological safety in sport, it is going to bleed out into your entire community.
ABC Radio, Melbourne and Victoria. Now we're talking.
Good morning. You're on the Conversation Hour. Rochelle Hunt with you in Melbourne. Warwick Long, your co-host this morning, host of the Country Hour and joining you from ABC Shepparton. The Australian Sports Commission is releasing a heap of modules that will help you and your local club be the best that they can be, in particular when it comes to psychological safety in sport. Cameron Tredell, the Coaching and Officiating Director of the Australian Sports Commission, is with you, and Professor Rochelle Imey, who is a Professor of Sport and the Director of Physical Activity and Sports Inside Group at Federation University. We want to bring into the conversation someone who works incredibly hard at keeping kids safe in sport, and that is Eric Dennison. He is a behavioural scientist at Monash University. And in particular, Eric, I know you and I have spoken at length on the Conversation Hour about how to ensure that homophobia is something that is stamped out in sport, in local sport and in elite sport. When it comes to what works and what doesn't, where does something like releasing a series of modules come in to helping people feel that they can be truly who they are at their local club?
Yeah, and thanks for doing this conversation today, because I agree with you. We have made headway in this space. Even the fact that, you know, Cameron is doing great work and psychological safety is on the radar, which is something that I've been working with the Sports Commission for over a decade. And it's a very, you know, Cameron has probably been a big driver of that. And, you know, the work that Rochelle is doing around participation and why people drop out has been so critical. And from that, we've realized, yes, we do need to change behavior and culture in clubs. That's foundational, you know, but it's, and right now there's a lot of really bad behavior, like constant homophobic language, sexist language, and racist language that's used day to day in clubs. The issue is that doing an online training module, you know, while I commend the Sports Commission for creating them, the coaches who really need to do them are not doing them. And even if they do them, there's a big gap between doing an online training module and actually changing their behavior day to day. And I'll give you a perfect example of that. So we, you know, every coach should know they shouldn't use homophobic language. Right. You know, I think these are adults. They shouldn't, particularly with children, you know, 16, 17 year olds. Yet in our research, where we surveyed every single rugby club with players that are 16 to 20 in the state of Victoria, we found that 100% of the teams, the players reported that the coaches were using homophobic language or that they were using this with their coaches. And this is, you know, these are extreme slurs. These are not just calling, you know, that's so gay. So, you know, there's, coaches know not to use that language, yet they're still using it. So I guess what we really need here is some kind of mechanism to both get them to do these modules, but then also to get them to take them seriously. And that's where it'd be interesting to hear what Cameron thinks about that in terms of
so can, I mean, it's a lot of this preaching to the converted. And I mean, we talk about sort of letting the old go out and the new blood come in. That's probably a part of this too. How do you change behaviour? As Eric says, there's reading the manual, but then there's changing your behaviour.
Yeah, and it's a really good point from Eric, is the fact that there's layers of complexity, because, I mean, I work in Sydney and I have very little touch points with any clubs in Western Australia, for example. So for me to, you know, for us to think that we can hold the stick across every single club in the country is absolute nonsense. We can't. What we need is a multifaceted, multi-layered approach to who are the right people to engage at the right time to then help us with national agreed strategies on basic rights of people to enter into sport and be safe. And then how do we then effectively monitor and support people at clubs and communities to what the behaviour is. Our first step is to make sure that our messaging is very, very clear, make sure that we've got the available resources, education, training and development, and working with the national sporting organisations as well as the offices of sport and rec around the country to ensure that we've made everything really, really clear and available, and start to work on how do we do it collectively.
And I wonder too, Eric, I mean, I'm going to use Rochelle Imey's example here. If it took her to stand up for herself at her local golf course to say, well, look, that was actually inappropriate behaviour that occurred there, is some of this not necessarily about giving the tools to the people who probably won't pay attention to it, but empowering those to stand up for themselves so that these modules or whatever the information or the training might be, that we all have access to it. So actually it's maybe us that can stand up to the coach or to the team manager or whoever it is to say how you're behaving is inappropriate and here's the evidence and here's the backing that I've got to prove that and to give me the strength to stand up for myself.
So there's two ways that I can answer that. So going to Cameron's point, I reckon people listening to this in their car probably thought, oh my God, we can barely get a coach to show up or find coaches, let alone a very, what you're talking about, Cameron, is this very complex web of, you know, governments working together in alignment and that kind of stuff. You know, I think this, we're working with the city of Vancouver right now in Canada. I'm obviously originally from Canada. And I think there's a very simple solution here. Local councils are the ones that hold the keys to the sporting grounds. So if local councils are the only level of government that can start driving change in sport by making it a mandatory requirement to fix behavioral problems, you know, and in essence, you know, these local councils are probably legally on the hook for all the bullying and harassment and abuse that does occur in sport. And so they have a legal...
I pay my rights. I want you to actually protect
us. Exactly. Yeah. You know, like why are they letting people on sport use sporting facilities without any oversight whatsoever? Now, the second thing is, unfortunately, the only person in research that our colleagues have done at Victoria Uni and other places, the only person who can really drive change to coach behavior is probably the captains, the first grade captains and male captains specifically, and the best players at a club. So those are the people that we need to activate. Broad-based, you know, as we call it, bystander training, unfortunately doesn't work because most people don't have the social capital to be able to drive
change. It's like taking the popular kid and getting them to spruik it. Yeah. Rochelle, what do you think about the idea of local councils actually having some say and some control here? Is that fraught?
Oh, look, I don't know, but culture is very important in a club, and you often see clubs that have fantastic culture and within the same code and same association, clubs that have really poor culture. What I think would be really good is to have a look at both ends of the spectrum about, you know, what is happening and why and trying to understand that and have some really good case studies of how to drive good culture within sport.
And Rochelle, does there need to be some acknowledgement here? We're humans, we're involved, we're donating
flawed.
Our time, we're flawed. The hope is to have people wanting to do better, obviously, but no one and no club is going to be perfect all the time.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, too, what I'd really like to see, clubs often have their theme songs sort of written in the change room so people can remember it and understand that, but maybe having a sign of and a written example of what are the values and the principles of our club, who are we and what do we stand for and, you know, what are we about, and I think that would help as well.
I think there's some really good tangible ideas there. Maybe speaking to your local council, I love the idea, Rochelle, of, you know, having posters up about what the club stands for, so it is just a reminder, even if it's subconscious.
But it's
Eric,
values, right?
Yeah, it's
values.
It's
showing your values.
And Eric, that idea of taking the person that already has some influence. I know you and I have spoken about whether or not pride rounds make a difference or do ambassadors make a difference, but taking the person that is already of some influence and ensuring maybe that they're sharing the modules, for example, Eric.
Yeah, and we've actually just finished analysis on a 5-year study, which found that plus Pride Games has a very significant impact on language. So clubs that have done captains training, which was developed by Rugby Victoria, and then done Pride Games, they use much less homophobic language than clubs that have not. And that was a before and after trial, so a proper controlled trial. So, you know, I think we're starting to get the evidence. And, you know, Cameron's program is definitely based on evidence. And we need to create those resources because once we start getting people to actually be doing something at clubs, right, once we find the lever to get them to start taking action, we do need resources for them to use. And so it is a bit of a chicken and egg thing. But at the same time, right now, they're just, a lot of them are not using those resources. And even if they do, that doesn't change the behavior. So that's the tricky bit we need to solve right now.
Oh, it's so true. Eric Dennison, though, thank you very much for your insight on the program today. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Behavioral scientist there at Monash.
Cameron Trudell, Coaching and Officiating Director at the Australian Sports Commission. These modules have gone live. If there are people listening now that think, you know what, maybe I should read those, and you're not even involved in a sporting group, but you're in some local social group, maybe you've got some issues at your local club, maybe you've thrown your hand up to be a coach or a team member or a canteen manager, whatever it may be, who and how can people access these new modules?
Well, first of all, all of our things are anyone can access, so we make sure that they're freely available. And they're on the Australian Sports Commission website on the coaching and officiating page, where you can go down and find a myriad. There's a lot of resources there that will support this sort of thing. And we've got four or five available now, and over the next couple of months we'll be adding to those. And so this will become a full library. And to your point, Rochelle, I think that was a really good one, is the fact that how do you have a difficult conversation? That's one of the little modules that we've pulled together of, these are some of the methods you can use to have a difficult conversation. These are some of the ways that you can understand other people's biases and how to sort of support and work with a conversation. How can you have open and honest, or facilitate an open and honest conversation? So some of these things aren't just sport related, they are societal. And yes, they're available on the website now, but they will grow in time to come. And all of our other resources, so something like the coaching essential skills or the officiating essential skills, which is going live very, very soon.
Hit the button
at any
moment.
It also focuses on this. Exactly right. It's literally going.
Well, the fact is, many of us, and I know Woz, this is something that you did when you start out in this, you're generally just throwing your hand up because no one else would.
Yeah.
And then you turn to anything and everything for help because none of us know. So the fact that there is information there, maybe information for you to share. Cameron, as always, thank you so much for your time and your work. We urge people to go to the Australian Sports Commission website and to be able to access some of these modules. Thanks, as always, for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
And Professor Rochelle Imey, Professor of Sports Science and Director of Physical Activity and Sports Insights Group at Federation Uni. Lots of love coming in for you, Rochelle, in particular about standing up for yourself at the golf course. So I think you've inspired a lot of people, mate. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Was this bigger than sport, yeah?
I love the suggestion on the text line, Rochelle, that's like, show it to Pollies before they go into question time. And, you know, I'm supportive of it. I think this is all about life and learning, right? And you're right, bigger than sport, hey, Rochelle. And I've certainly learnt something today.
So don't forget, the Conversation Hour is also a podcast. We do a lot of grassroots sport because it is such a big part of our lives. So if this is the first time you've listened to this program, go back to the Conversation Hour pod, go to the ABC Listen app, and there are lots of different issues on everything from being inclusive to being a good kids coach to how to deal with difficult parents at your local club, you name it. Go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a wonderful weekend. My name's Rochelle Hunt. Take care and speak on Monday.